Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, February 16th. Craddock files HJR 27 to fund Grow Texas. Resolution would bring state money generated by oil and gas production back to the Permian Basin and other energy-producing hotbeds. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. State Representative Tom Craddock has again filed a resolution in the Texas House of Representatives to bring state money generated by oil and gas production back to the Permian Basin and other energy-producing hotbeds. House Joint Resolution 27 would create the Generate Recurring Oil Wealth for Texas Fund, or GROW. According to a press release from Craddock's office, Joint Resolution 27 funds would be returned to where they originated to make improvements to expand roads and invest in infrastructure needed in the energy-producing areas. Quote, "The energy-producing regions of Texas continually generate the funds needed to support all Texans," Craddock said in the release. GROW returns a portion of these finances to the communities during the times they need it most. It allows those communities to continue to grow and build their infrastructure when in demand. This bill would be a huge step forward for all of Texas, end quote. The Midland Republican added that the fund does not create or raise taxes, but it secures the existing state revenue paid by oil and gas severance taxes for specific reinvestment in the Texas oil patch. The money could be used for roads, education, broadband, law enforcement, and many other of the required needs in these energy communities. GROW has broad support from a variety of companies, trade associations, and individuals, according to Craddock's office. Quote, "Some of these supporters include Apache, CenterPoint Energy, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Diamondback Energy, ExxonMobil, Halliburton, Motran, Occidental Petroleum, Pioneer, Panhandle Producers Royalty Owner, PPROA, Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, Texas Association of Business, Texas Pipeline Association, Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, TIPRO, and Texas Oil and Gas Association," the news release said. Previously, the GROW Texas legislation has been passed out of the Texas House twice with more than 120 votes in support of the measure. Half-acre Pitmaster takes first place in San Antonio, ready for Houston cook-off. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Fourth-generation Midlander Aaron Leslie, Pitmaster at Half-Acre, and creator of Texas Oil Dust Seasoning, attributes his cook-off competition success to consistency and cooking quality Midland Meat Company product. In late January, Leslie won first place for his brisket at the San Antonio Stock Show and Rodeo Barbecue Cook-Off, a competition of nearly 300 teams. Starting February 23rd, he will attend the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo Barbecue Cook-Off, where first-place barbecue would be comparable to winning a world championship, he said. Leslie was a drilling superintendent for the Apache Corporation until 2018. In 2016, John Scarber asked him to be a caterer for Midland Meat Company. Leslie began cooking steaks and barbecue meats for the company's catering orders. Leslie said consistency makes a competitive cook grow and get better over time. Additionally, he solely cooks top-of-the-line Midland meat company Meats, which has helped him win prizes all over the major barbecue state of Texas. Quote, "Briskets from John Scarber are the only thing I've cooked since 2016, Leslie said. "Those briskets are special, special breed, special heritage, bloodlining. So it's a different flavor. John's beef has won multiple awards. It's taken some very top-notch stages at some of the biggest competitions in the world." End quote. Leslie said the beef he's cooking at competitions is highly sought after and has helped him become a better cook. He also mentioned consistency and his supporters as reason for his success. Quote, "Being consistent, cooking the best meats, having the right materials on hand, having the right recipes, and doing it day in and day out, 50 to 60 times a year, that's what makes us who we are and the people that support us," he said. "Without a support group and a group behind you, rooting you, cheering you on, and giving you the things you need to succeed, barbecue competitions will fade away," end quote. In addition to winning competitions, Leslie's Texas Oil Dust seasoning can be found at Midland Meat Company. Scarberry became Leslie's first customer in 2015 as he was first opening Midland Meat Company. Quote, "I went to a competition that weekend. I won first place, got grand champion out of 78 teams, Leslie said. He sold all the seasoning, ordered 10 more cases, and we've been friends ever since," end quote. The pair became business partners in 2020 when Scarber expressed interest in Texas Oil Dust. "The idea for a seasoning line came out of necessity," according to Leslie. He said he began using them on the meats he was cooking for Midland Meat Company catering and started using them in competitions as well. The line has since expanded into injections, barbecue sauce, rubs, marinades, and more. Leslie said without Midlanders and the Midland Meat Company, this 13-product barbecue line wouldn't be possible. Small Bites T-180 Grand Opening Friday. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Tucked behind a wall of hotels and across the street from La Mission stands Midland's newest boba and gelato shop, T-180. Boba, also known as bubble tea, originated in Taiwan in the early 1980s and has spread globally. Made with a tea base, many boba drinks contain fruity, frothy, sweet, and natural flavors, making the drink one of the most customizable treats available to date. At the bottom of bubble tea, you'll find the syrup-soaked tapioca balls that give the drink its name. The chewy and somewhat odd texture found in the tapioca balls gives the drink a fun kick and is usually the reason people go searching for businesses like T-180. Some Midlanders have had the chance to try T-180 early and left reviews on Facebook. Max Akers, quote, "We went yesterday, and it was so good. The matcha cloud was incredible," end quote. For its grand opening, T-180 is offering 10% off to all customers on Friday. Between two private areas and a large number of chair booth combos, plenty of Instagrammable seating will be available. To find out more about the shop, visit their Facebook. Here's what patrons can find at the new bubble tea hotspot. Classic options. These will be your typical flavors and milk tea combinations. For those looking to satisfy a sweet tooth, I'll go for a brown sugar milk tea filled with caramel and delicious syrup goodness, or a taro milk tea, or, as I like to call it, lavender goodness in a cup. Other choices include jasmine milk tea, oolong milk tea, coconut milk tea, honeydew milk tea, wintermelon milk tea, Hokkaido milk tea, Okinawa milk tea, coffee milk tea, brown sugar match latte, brown sugar boba latte, and strawberry latte. Fruit tea. Made with black or green tea, fruit teas don't contain milk, ultimately feeling less dessert type and more like the lines of a refresher. T180 offers 7 flavors: mango, lychee, a sweet berry native to many Asian countries and my personal favorite, passion fruit, strawberry, peach, watermelon, and wintermelon. Cloud series. Cloud boba is fairly new to the game. This is when a slightly salty foam is added throughout or on top of the drink, making the overall experience more shake-like. T180 offers a taro cloud, honeydew cloud, match cloud, mango cloud, and coffee cloud. Toppings. Beyond the tapioca balls found within the insatiable drinks, guests can also add popping pearls, tapioca balls filled with a flavored jelly, and jelly cubes to the top of their drinks. Popping pear options include mango, yogurt, and strawberry, while jelly cubes can be coffee, grass, lychee, or rainbow. Other toppings include red bean, classic boba, and salted cheese foam. Sweet treats. To finish off the T180 menu, make sure to check out their slushies: mango passion fruit or strawberry peach, yogurt, orange, mango, strawberry, and lychee, smoothies, mango, avocado, coconut, coffee coconut, strawberry, lychee, honeydew, passion fruit, peach, and the blended coffee, caramel frappe, vanilla frappe, coffee frappe, mocha frappe, and white chocolate frappe. One item of note is T180's waffle cup. A folded egg waffle can be filled with whipped cream, fruit, chocolate sauce, gelato, or any other item available. Visit T180 at 1201 Tradewinds Boulevard, Suite 103, open 10:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, February 16th, 2023. Your social news. What's Up with Midland? By Morgan Taylor Thomas. At the Blue Door, live music with Royce Corbell, Saturday, February 25th. Tall City Bagel Pop-Up, Saturday. Fat Tuesday, February 21st. Crepes and Cocktails, February 22nd. At Centennial Park, Rise and Run, Saturday. At City Nights, Poker Night with Wine and Canvas, Friday. At Eccentric Brewing Company, Singer-Songwriter Night, Friday. At the Horseshoe, West Texas Kennel Club, Thursday through Saturday. Rialana Spring Consignment, Sunday through Wednesday. Rig Zone Career Fair, February 22nd. Sun Country Region Volleyball Association, February 24th through 26th. At La Hacienda Event Center, Grupo Liberacion Grupo Brindis, February 24th. At Little Woodrow's, Mardi Gras Party, February 21st. At Micro Market, Galantine's Night, Thursday. At Midland Community Theater, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Friday through Sunday, February 24th and 25th, and March 3rd and 4th. Golden Ticket Experience with Susie's South 40 Confections, Saturday. At the Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Farmers Market, Saturday. At Sip House, Auntie Valentine's, Friday. Stoplight Party, February 22nd. At Tall City Brewing Company, Crude, Avalon Beer Release, Saturday. Live Music with Brian Findlay, Saturday. Mardi Gras Party, February 21st. Crude, Sprayberry Beer Release, February 25th. Tall City VFW Post 7208. Peace, Pause, and Mardi Gras, Saturday. At Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Lone Star Brass, Friday. Cheap Trick, February 28th. At Woody's Hideaway, Mardi Gras Party, February 21st. Three Things to Do in Midland This Weekend by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Enjoy original tunes. Back for round two, Eccentric Brewing Company's latest installment, Singer-Songwriter Night, hits their homemade stage with 15 slots open for local artists to show off their stuff. With 10 minutes allowed for each set, Eccentric encourages participants to bring their two best original songs. Host Lumbee River calls the shots and celebrates his birthday. Participants earn a drink on the house. Don't be late because the cutoff to sign up ends when the sheet is filled. A microphone cable and two instrument cables will be available. Friday. Sign-ups begin at 6 p.m., music at 7 p.m. at 1402 Cotton Flat Road. Try two new local brews. Tall City Brewing Company will release two new sips this weekend. First, the Crude Avalon Imperial Stout, which boils for 12 hours, creating a massive sugar bomb for the yeast to munch on. This leaves the seasonal taproom only drink tasting sweet and thick. Next is the All Y'all Saison, produced in partnership with the West Texas Yacht Club. Light and refreshing, the sip stands as the brewing company's first saison. Joining the party bill is live music via Brian Findlay, Jamaican Bites, courtesy of Jammin' Niamians, and cheese steaks made in the kitchen by Lori. Saturday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., 3303 West Golf Course. Say hello to Fat Tuesday. Ringing in Fat Tuesday a little early this year is Tall City VFW Post 7208, benefiting both the Post and a Paw in Need rescue. Attendees can expect a Cajun cook-off. $15 entry in advance, $20 the day of. A Mardi Gras costume contest, live music from Jerry Hart and Flatland, a bake sale, gift basket raffle, a cash bar, food available for purchase, and much more. Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. at 1306 East Taylor. Community Roundup by Stuart Doreen. Midland Energy and Commerce Field Hearing. Congressman August Pfluger announced a House Energy Committee and Commerce Committee hearing is scheduled for 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. The hearing is an exciting opportunity for the community to participate in a congressional hearing highlighting the benefits that the Permian Basin provides to America's economic and national security, according to a press release from the San Angelo Republican about the event. Midland Mayor Lori Blong and local leader and businessman Adrian Carrasco will testify before the committee. The hearing is open to the public. Permian Basin Prayer Breakfast. The 2023 Permian Basin Prayer Breakfast will take place from 7 to 8:15 a.m. Thursday at Bush Convention Center. The event is a time for guided prayer moderated by Pastor Roy Smith. For ticket information, contact npmidland.org or call 432-230-5340. Animal Services Adoption Special. The City of Midland Animal Service will celebrate Valentine's Day with a Be Mine adoption special of $14 through Saturday. Adoptions include a microchip, rabies booster vaccinations, and spay or neuter. Calendar. Annual Prayer Breakfast, 7 to 8:15 a.m. Thursday at the Bush Convention Center. West Texas Kennel Club, Thursday through Saturday at the Horseshoe Pavilion. From Disability to Possibility, The Power of Inclusive Classrooms, presented by Bynum School, Friday at Bynum School. Wild Wild West Casino Night, benefiting Oil Patch Kids, February 24th at the Bush Convention Center. https://www.betterunite.com/OilPatchKidsWildWildWestCasinoNight. Upcoming meetings. Midland ISD Board Team Building Training, 9 a.m. Saturday at the Chamber of Commerce Boardroom, 303 West Wall, Suite 200.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, February 16th. Frank Midkiff, age 85, passed away on February 13th at his home in Brown County. A visitation for Frank will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, February 17th at Heartland Funeral Home. Graveside services for Frank will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, February 18th at Cedar Point Cemetery in Brownwood. Frank was born on January 21, 1938 in Midland to parents Frank F. and Louise Wolcott Midkiff. He was preceded in death by his parents, as well as a brother Foy Midkiff and wife Linda, and a granddaughter Emily Nicole. Frank is survived by wife Sherry Nunn Midkiff of Brownwood, children Gary and wife Kathy Midkiff, Kim and husband John McLean, Tammy and husband Brian Humphreys, Kelly and husband Billy Williams, stepchildren Allison, husband Reardon Hartzog, Audra Verestegi, Aaron and wife Jessica Custer, as well as 17 grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, and his brother Charles and wife Mary Midkiff. Condolences, memories, and tributes can be offered to the family online at heartlandfuneralhome.net. James Lane Lockler of Midland passed away on February 13th. James was born to Betty and Ernest Lockler in Midland, Texas, on November 17, 1954. He was one of three boys. In 1977, James married the love of his life, Cheryl. He is survived by wife Cheryl, daughters Kelly and Christy, granddaughter Bailey, and grandsons Trent, Braden, Tyler, and Dylan, and brother Kirby. James is preceded in death by his mother and father, Betty and Ernest Lockler, and brother Gary. A service will be held at St. Anne Catholic Church on Friday, February 17th at 10 a.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Laurel Ann Branch Biggers, age 55, of Midland, passed away on Friday, February 3rd. She was born in Greencastle, Indiana, on May 17, 1967. She moved to Midland, Texas in 1983. On March 31, 1989, she married her husband, Gary Lynn Branch. With his father, Brownie, and their son, Garrett, they owned and operated a roofing business, A&W Contractors. She was preceded in death by her first son, Michael James Farley, her brother, Brian Kelly Ward, her mother, Rose Ann Walden, her grandmother, Olivia Burris, her father, Laurel Orville Ward, and her husband, Gary Lynn Branch, brother-in-law, Larry Dennis Branch, father-in-law, Afton Wallace Branch, and mother-in-law, Phyllis Ann Branch. She is survived by her two sons and a daughter, Garrett Branch, age 33, and wife Andrea Branch, as well as several grandchildren. Her youngest son, Samuel Alden Lawless, and her oldest, Afton Christine Branch, and wife Kara Bingham. Funeral services will be held in Midland on Thursday, February 23rd, at Downtown Church of Christ, located at 505 San Angelo Street, at 11 a.m. Linda Faye Fisher Farmer, age 74, passed away on Monday, February 13th, in Midland. Linda was born on January 30th, 1949, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. She married her soulmate, Richmond A. Farmer, Jr., on December 30th, 1966. Linda is preceded in death by her beloved daughter, Wendy Farmer, her husband, Richmond A. Farmer, Jr., her parents, Nellie and Joseph Fisher, brother, Bill Fisher, and sisters, Joanne Wilson and Hazel Fletcher. Linda is survived by her son and daughter-in-law, Megan and Trey Farmer, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held on Friday, February 17th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park in Midland. The memorial service will be held on Saturday, February 18th, at 10 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park in Midland. All are welcome to join in celebrating Linda's life. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com for the Farmer family. Matthew Taylor Hermanson, age 29, of Midland, passed away Friday, February 10th. He was born to Mark and Pam Hermanson on March 16, 1993. He is survived by his parents, Mark and Pam, sisters Stephanie and Amber, brother-in-law David Johnson, and his favorite niece, Ryan Olivia. a private family celebration of life will be held in memory of Matthew. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Pamela K. Lewis passed away on Saturday, February 11th. A celebration of her life will be held on Sunday, February 19th at 2 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Chapel. Pamela was born on May 3, 1958 in Snyder, Texas. She was the eldest of three children born to K. Wayne Lewis and Lucy Cathcart Lewis. Pam graduated in the top of her class from Midland Lee High School and magna cum laude with a bachelor's degree in biology from Baylor University. Pam is survived by her sister, Karen Beth Lewis, brother Kevin Wayne Lewis, and wife Roxanne Lewis, niece Kristen Lewis Lott, and husband Christopher Lott, niece Candace Lewis Blaylock, and husband John Blaylock, and great-nephew Grant Lewis Blaylock. Pam is preceded in death by her parents, Lucy Cathcart Lewis and K. Wayne Lewis. In lieu of flowers, please consider donating to the ASPCA, the Wounded Warrior Project, or American Cancer Society. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Barbara Burns Robinson, age 70, of Midland, passed away on February 13th. A receiving of friends will be held on Friday, February 17th, from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel, 1502 North Lamesa Road in Midland. Funeral service will be Saturday, February 18th, at Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church, 2400 North Tyler Street in Midland, starting at 11 a.m. Interment will be on Monday, February 20th, at 1 p.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens, 6800 Texas Highway 349, Midland, Texas. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos, Sanchez, and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Brianna Lexa Lemus, age 19, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, February 9th. A public visitation for Brianna will be held Thursday, February 16th, from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. A celebration of life will occur Friday, February 17th, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. at Elevate Church, 200 Baldwin Street, Midland. A burial will occur Friday, February 17th at 3 p.m. at 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com for the Lemus family. Umberto Luvano of Midland died February 14th in Midland. There are no services scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Maria Elena Valles, age 70, of Stanton, passed away on February 14th. A viewing will be held from 2 p.m. until 8 p.m. Wednesday, February 15th, at Stanton Memorial Funeral Chapel. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, February 16th, at Stanton Memorial Funeral Chapel. Interment will follow at St. Joseph's Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at www.stantonfh.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and it's Thursday, February 16th, 2023. City Council hires consultant for sports complex. Residents urge council to pass chicken ordinance. A half dozen residents came forward during the Odessa City Council's workshop session Tuesday to express their support for a proposed ordinance change that would allow Odessans to own up to four hens. Geneva Peterson, Bill Cleaver, Caleb York, Tim Harry, Freda Daniels, and Lucio Rodriguez all spoke about the advantages of having fowl, including better, fresher eggs and fertilizer, but a few did ask for some minor tweaks to the proposed ordinance. Under the proposed ordinance, the hens would have to be in an enclosed structure with three or more sides and a cover. It would also have to have a floor and a door that would allow them to move back and forth between the coop and an enclosed yard. The coop would also have to be located within the rear yard, no closer than 50 feet from any property line, and at a location not visible from a public street. Hay, grain, feed, and all other food sources would have to be stored in secure containers, and it couldn't be fed on the ground according to the proposed ordinance. The city would charge $25 for a backyard hen permit and a multiple pet permit, and $15 for wing clipping. Peterson noted that even though she has a 1/4-acre lot, which is one of the larger lots in Odessa, she would not be allowed to have hens given the 50-foot rule. Cleaver said because he's got two water wells, he'd not be able to keep hens due to restrictions regarding distances from wells. Harry and Daniels also noted that not all chickens can fly, so not all chickens need to be clipped. Mayor Javier Hoven said the original ordinance banning fowls stemmed from illegal cockfighting taking place within the city. He said he believes there are valid arguments for amending the ordinance and not amending it, but asked the council to give it more consideration, as it will be appearing on an upcoming agenda soon. The mayor agreed there are benefits of having chickens, but said there would be an additional strain placed on the city's animal control division if passed. Odessa Police Chief Michael Gerke said, if the ordinance does pass, the city will need to create a space for when bad chicken owners have their hens seized. City Council member Steve Thompson said it would be logistically impossible for the city to enforce the 50 feet rule and pointed out the average price of a dozen eggs has dropped 57% over the last month from $5.63 to $2.61. This is a knee-jerk reaction to a short-term problem, Thompson said. Peterson responded by saying, it wasn't a knee-jerk reaction. I have wanted chickens since I moved to Odessa 5 years ago. It's not about the price of eggs. It's about wanting good quality eggs. It's about the animal husbandry experience for my sons. It's about a lifestyle, she said. Floyd Gwynn. The council also received updates on the Floyd Gwynn Park restoration and the new animal control shelter. Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton told the council that after a few delays for materials, the park is 98% complete and will come in under budget by $68,000 to $72,000. Starting within the next week or so, he said staff will begin working to replace more than 100 trees that have been lost due to drought or freezes. Gerke said the animal shelter has been given a temporary certificate of occupancy and the punch list will be completed by early next week at the latest. Once finished, the city will destroy the old animal shelter and focus on landscaping, he said. The city had one person express interest in becoming a full-time veterinarian, but they withdrew, Gerke said. The hunt will continue. Recycling. During the city's regular council session later Tuesday night, the council discussed the possibility of eliminating its recycling program or scaling it back. The city currently disposes roughly 100,000 tons of garbage a year and about 700 tons of recyclables. Public Works Director Tom Kerr noted an unacceptable amount of the city's recyclables are contaminated and there isn't much of a market for recyclables nowadays. Solid Waste Superintendent Jesse Rodriguez told the council his staff has to pick up 336 recycle bins on Saturdays because of a staffing shortage, and they're paid overtime to do so. BRI Recycling Services then sorts through the materials midweek, and his staff take the remaining refuge to the landfill on Fridays. In other words, the city is picking up the same refuge twice, Hoven said. Hoven also noted the building where the sorting is done is in a building that is unstable and should be condemned. What I want to convey to the council is, I don't want to stop recycling. I know a lot of our school kids want to recycle, Hoven said. However, the city set aside $350,000 to redesign the building, and no one knows how much it will cost to build it, he said. I've been out there, and the trash is sitting on the ground, and there are a lot of cats, rats, and things of that nature. So right here, it's not sanitary. Now, too, we have the cost of the building, Hoven said. If the city decides to pool its community collection sites and only make recycling available at the time machine, Hoven said the city would need assurances the waste would be monitored for contamination. He asked staff to get the BRI to work up a cost analysis that includes monitoring staff. Sports Complex. The city also agreed to hire Synergy Sports Global for $15,000 to conduct a sports complex feasibility study. The company, which also develops and manages multi-sports facilities and recreation centers, helped create a $25 million sports complex in Heath, a $125 million complex in Colorado, and a $40 million project in New Jersey. According to a PowerPoint presentation they gave, the Parks and Recreation Board, Synergy would study the area's demographics and socioeconomics, sports participation rates, competitors, the size and components of the city's courts and fields, possible partnerships, and construction costs. They'd also determine potential sites and create an operating budget. Thompson expressed his displeasure. The Odessa Development Corporation isn't picking up the bill for the study. He believes it is allowed to do so. Interim City Attorney Dan Jones informed the ODC board he disagrees. The city is expected to post a link on the city's website asking for residences' hopes and dreams for the complex this week. In other business, the city council decided they would not be going out to bid again for the food, beverage, and concession operation at Ratliff Ranch Golf Course. Staff has recommended they go out to bid for a second time because they only received two bids and one vendor withdrew. Matthew Christman, Deputy Parks and Recreation Director, said Lynx Bar and Grill has had the contract for 5 years, so they thought it would be best to go out to bid. Although they bid again, he said, Lynx employees haven't been wearing uniforms that would set them apart from golf course employees, and the new superintendent recently received a Philly steak on a hot dog bun. Council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata expressed displeasure that Christman did not consult the Golf Advisory Board about the contract, and council member Chris Haney said he thinks Lynx won the bid fair and square. Lynx owner Derek Bush noted he gave a presentation to the Golf Advisory Board when he bid on the contract 5 years ago. He's on track to exceed the revenue projections for the year, and while his staff may not show up in uniforms, they show up. Most have been with him since April 2018, which is unusual in their line of work, he said. Lynx survived COVID-19 and the debacle of dying greens, Bush said. After meeting in executive session, the council took no action regarding a lawsuit filed against the city in February 2022. The family of two teens, Keenan Gage Garms, 19, and Evan James Hill, 18, are suing the city claiming they were killed in a wreck caused by an obstructed stop sign. Two teens critically injured in the crash, Damarian Brew and Benjamin Matthew Luna, are also plaintiffs in the lawsuit. Hard questions. Controversy arises over new joint airport zoning board. When Odessa Assistant City Manager Aaron Smith stood before the City Council Tuesday night, he faced some hard questions from Mayor Javier Hoven. Smith told the council he wanted to amend the city's April 2020 Master Thoroughfare Plan. He wanted to eliminate the connection of the Desert Ridge subdivision to the Sunset Heights neighborhood and the connection of Dawn to Yukon. While he acknowledged the existing plan currently conflicts with Schleymeyer Airport's runway protection zone, Smith insisted his primary reasons for wanting to change plans for 61st Street and Dawn Avenue were safety, walkability, and quality of life. The best neighborhoods, he said, are those in which streets lead to them and not through them. Hoven had already been suspicious about the county, the RPZ, and Schleymeyer Airport before the meeting. The county has scheduled to hold a meeting Wednesday for a new 5-member joint airport zoning board. Hoven said that while he knew the county had created the board, and City Council member Greg Connell and Traffic Operations Superintendent Hal Feldman joined in last week, Hoven said he was not aware of the scheduled meeting. Most importantly, Hoven said Tuesday morning, he became aware in the board in November, but he had been unable to get the county to answer any of his questions. During the interview with the OA on Tuesday night, Hoven said both former Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes and current Judge Dustin Fawcett informed him in November the county was in violation of Federal Aviation Administration rules requiring counties and cities to have a joint airport zoning board. He was further told the original board dissolved and the city was in danger of losing hotel motel taxes and the county was in danger of losing the ability to land big planes in the future, Hoven said. He was also informed the FAA says the traffic lights at Dawn and Yukon are too tall. He heard through the grapevine that Smith, who was hired by former city manager Michael Marrero 2 weeks before Marrero was fired on December 13th, has been included in some discussions, but Hoven said interim city manager Agapito Bernal has not been included in the loop. I'd just like to know if we're creating another bureaucratic board, shouldn't we know why we're creating that? What's the purpose of it? Is there a fiduciary responsibility, statutory responsibility? I mean, we have more questions and none of them are being answered other than, you have to do it, Hoven said. The Ector County Commissioner's Court turned down $15 million from the state for a runway extension in July 2021. If the county is going after that money now, Hoven said, there would be many angry residents near the airport. Hoven also questioned whether the county and city ever had an airport zoning board. The city has no record of such a board forming. If it existed and the FAA was a part of it, how does a board dissolve and go away? Did it ever really exist? Hovind asked Tuesday morning. He also was led to believe the county has been meeting for a year about the zoning board and the RPZ. My question to the former judge was, if you've been meeting for a year, why am I now just hearing about it? If it's such a concern that we know, why didn't she ever pick up the phone and call? While questioning Smith Tuesday night, Hovind insisted the existing plan for Dawn and 61st would alleviate overflow from the main streets. And he repeatedly asked him if safety and walkability were truly behind Smith's request. Have you been going to Yukon? Well, we know what's driving that, and that has nothing to do with destination, walkability, or anything. It has to do with the acreage of the county, Hovind said. When Stringer approached the podium, Hovind asked if nobody truly knew in April 2020, when the plans were drawn, there was a 5-acre RPZ. Stringer said they did not. He further denied keeping the city out of the loop. Stringer read emails from June 15th between himself and City Council member Mark Mata about the RPZ and whether the Dawn Avenue extension had been approved. Mata told him it had been discussed and it would be on agenda soon, but said the city was searching for funds for it. You all need to talk to TxDOT Aviation. There's a great chance they would shut down the project because it is directly under the takeoff and landing of the runway for Schlemmer Airport, Stringer read. I was telling him, don't waste your money on Dawn. I think I gave plenty of warning as soon as I knew about it. Stringer said he's sure Mata, a good guy, informed the rest of the council about their conversations. They just put their fingers in their ears and la 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 la, Stringer said. Stringer said he reminded Hovind about the need for a joint airport board during a swearing-in ceremony in November, but didn't get a response. However, City Utilities Director Tom Kerr said during Tuesday night's meeting, he met with Kaufman. Other city staff members and possibly county officials in December. He was told back then the county was considering changing the size of the RPZ. Following the meeting, Stringer also provided the OA emails sent to city officials, one dating as far back as March, about the need to meet for planning purposes. Letters sent in December by Hayes and Fawcett included Hovind, all of the council members, Bernal, interim city attorney Dan Jones, and Kerr. Stringer insisted he sent several other emails to city officials following his June meeting with Mata, but did not get any responses until last week, when he was informed Bernal had appointed city council member Greg Connell and Traffic Operations Superintendent Hal Feldman to the board. He could not immediately lay his hands on those emails. The OA has filed a Texas Public Information Act requesting for all joint airport board emails from the city. Like I told Hovind, if he'd ever returned my dadgum emails, we wouldn't be here today, Stringer said. After learning Wednesday the FAA has no record of an original joint zoning board, Stringer reached out to his consultant to clarify. He provided the Airport Zoning Act passed by the Texas legislature in September 1987, stating cities and counties may form such boards. I was made to believe it was mandated, Stringer said Wednesday afternoon. After a lengthy discussion involving developer Larry Lee, Lee and the city agreed to stop 61st and Dawn Avenue shorter than originally intended. Stringer said Wednesday he believes that will eliminate any issues with the RPZ, but on Tuesday night, Hovind instructed council member Steve Thompson to see if there's a way to move the RPZ. Stringer pointed out that RPZ is owned by the county. On Wednesday morning, the 5-member Joint Airport Zoning Board held its first meeting and spoke about airport safety at Schleimeyer Airport. Stringer said after the meeting, this board was formed to make sure an airplane doesn't land in someone's living room. Mark Merritt, the chairman of the Airport Advisory Board, explained the board was already formed for the safety of the pilots that fly in and out of the airport. The public safety and pilot safety are our main concern, Merritt said. The other three JAZB appointed members are Bill Ritter of the Airport Advisory Board, Connell, and Feldman. Stringer expressed the importance for the county and city to work together, not just on the JAZB, but every day. It's paramount, Stringer said, about the county and city working together. We need to work together, period. We are all Odessans. We are all Ector County people. I think we are going to have a good working relationship, and I'm looking forward to it. There were only four agenda items for the JAZB for its first meeting, so the meeting lasted about 30 minutes in the Ector County Commissioner's Courtroom. The items that were discussed included operations and responsibilities of the JAZB, discussion about whether to seek out professional services for the JAZB, and discussed adopting JAZB bylaws. There were no items voted on for the JAZB other than the ability to adjourn. There already is and has been cooperation between the developers, city and county, Merritt said. We don't have it cohesive where there's constant understanding yet, and that's what this zoning board will be tasked to do. The next meeting for the JAZB is set for 10 a.m. March 15th. Stringer believes it will take about 6 months to get ordinances and bylaws in order, and from there the JAZB will meet as needed. The JAZB will also get its own webpage on the Ector County website. Stringer said it will be about 3 or 4 more weeks before the website is complete. Once we get everything in place, the board won't have to meet as often, Stringer said. Stringer also said the city has lowered the traffic lights at Dawn and Yukon, and Feldman is researching to see if the street lights also need to be lowered. He also said Encore is studying all of the lights along Yukon to make sure they don't interfere with the RPZ. Stringer stressed the county turned down the $15 million 2 years ago because it would not have covered the cost of improving the airport's aprons and turns. The county would also have had to match 10% of the $15 million, he said. He also said the county and county residents are not interested in making changes that would allow big planes like 737s to land.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.